to you, Lord Christ.
6 days after Peter had acknowledged Jesus as the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, is it good for us to be here? If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. And they were coming down the mountain. Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
My sister and brother-in-law are hoping to move from Sonoma County to Bainbridge Island next spring. As a result, my sister has been going through lots and lots of things. Things that were precious to our grandparents, things that were precious to our parents, things we thought we needed to hang on to, things to pass on to our children. As it turns out, our children don't want most of those things. And surprisingly, neither do we. It isn't that they aren't important or weren't important to people who remain very important to us. It's just that there are so many things in our worlds, and we don't really need or even want them all. We want the closeness of connection we had when our mom talked about the carved elephant her big brother brought back from a tour of duty in Asia. We want the closeness of connection we had when our grandpa, with his great big hands and missing fingers, put dough in those dented old bread pans and left them to rise in the warm bathroom. We want the closeness of connection we had at Christmas time when we unwrapped each precious and particular ornament and told its story. And while it really is the closeness of connection we love about these things and not perhaps the things themselves, there are still some things we keep. Not because of their monetary value, but because they are of great value in a life lessons sort of way. They help us to remember the best in the ones we love and maybe even the best in ourselves. One of the few precious things of my mom's I think I will keep forever is a little framed pen and ink watercolor of a woman shaking a quilt out onto a bed. A favorite bit of scripture is penned at the bottom of the frame, "Do all things heartily as unto the Lord." Yes, that includes making the bed. Sometimes it's hard to do all things heartily as unto the Lord. Sometimes I don't feel like doing all things or even anything heartily. Sometimes I'm too tired. Sometimes I don't want to bother. Sometimes I forget that all my life is a gift from God, and I want to spend it giving it back for God's glory and the uplifting of God's people. When life feels mundane, when my prayer life feels empty, when God feels silent, it's hard to remember that the very simple fact of being able to make the bed, or even having a bed to make, is a glorious gift from God and something to be deeply grateful for. Sometimes when we hear stories like the one we hear today, stories of magnificent, even blinding visions, of prophetic revelations, of mountaintop experiences, we wonder how making the bed as beautifully as we can will ever count for anything. I don't know about you, but the handful of mystical or mysterious or miraculous experiences I've had of God, the few times I've audibly heard God's voice or physically felt God's presence, can easily become the stuff by which we measure the depth of our relationship with God or the magnitude of our faith. And that is a very, very bad idea. Yes, those mountaintop experiences are amazing, astounding, miraculous even. But when we think they are somehow the proof of our faith or our faithfulness, we do ourselves and each other a great disservice. I can't feel God, we cry, wanting the big experience and forgetting that bidden or unbidden, God is here. Believing that is the proof of our faith and our faithfulness. And yet, I think I understand Peter wanting to stay up there on the mountaintop with Moses and Elijah and Jesus. After all, they just had the mystical experience of a lifetime, maybe one of the best ones in the whole Bible. They'd been through so much only 6 days before. Peter announcing that Jesus was the Messiah, Jesus responding by telling them he was going to suffer greatly at human hands, he was going to be rejected by his own people, he would be killed and 3 days later rise from the dead. And then he told them if they wanted to be his followers, they needed to take up their own crosses and follow him. What on earth did all that mean? It certainly didn't sound good. And as they were trying to make sense of it all, Jesus called Peter, James, and John together and invited them to take a walk up the mountain. I have climbed many mountains in my life. Sometimes the paths were straightforward, but sometimes, climbing toward the top, there were long, winding stretches that felt like a labyrinth with switchbacks and direction changes where the only thing to do was to put one foot in front of the other, trusting that the trail would ultimately take me where I wanted to go. Sometimes I couldn't tell. But sometimes, when I finally got to the top, there was a moment of revelation. I could see where I'd come from, and I could see where I was going. And that's what happened to the disciples when they went up the mountain with Jesus. Imagine it. There they were, at the top of the mountain, far away from anyone. And it happened. That great epiphany. Jesus was transfigured, and the change was so profound that even his clothes began to glow dazzlingly white. He was transfigured, utterly transformed, completely changed before their very eyes. Gazing at their very human friend and teacher, Jesus, the disciples were suddenly dazzled by the glory of his very real divinity. And as if stunningly glowing Jesus weren't enough, Elijah and Moses were there too. So, being Peter, You know, at this point, he's utterly beside himself. He was at the top of the mountain with Moses. Moses, who brought the law down from Mount Sinai. Moses, who led the Israelites through the wilderness. Moses, who walked them right up to the promised land. And Elijah? Elijah, the mighty prophet who raised the dead, brought fire down from the sky, and was taken up into heaven in a mighty whirlwind. The disciples saw where they'd come from in Moses and Elijah. And there, between those two holy men of God, stood the transfigured Jesus, the Messiah, fully revealed, the new kingdom they were entering into. I don't think Jesus became divine in the transfiguration, but I do think his full nature, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, his nature was revealed. And that revelation changed everything for the disciples and for us. No wonder Peter offered to build three dwellings so they could all stay put. I imagine he thought the story might unfold differently, that maybe all the talk of crosses and suffering and dying would go away if they could just stay there in that dazzling light. But Peter couldn't change the story, and neither can we. And when all of a sudden the voice of the living God interrupted their musings, Peter and his friends were terrified. But Jesus' very gentle, very human touch took away their fear so that they could take that big voice in. And this is what they heard. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Listen to him. It's all the counsel they got, but it's all the counsel they needed. For those disciples and for us, the command to listen to Jesus didn't only mean hearing his words. It meant following. It meant obedience. It meant letting go of things or ideas or ways of life not meant to be held on to. Walking down the mountain, the disciples must have been in shock. They didn't want the moment to end. Peter's response made that so clear. "Wait, don't go. I'll build dwellings for all of you. Please don't leave." Yet, in the blink of an eye, it was over. And that's how life is, right? There are moments we want to hold on to forever, and we can't. People die. Jobs end. Relationships end. We lose our health, our independence, or maybe just our self-confidence. That's something of what it is to be human. Dying and rising, dying and rising, dying and rising. And still, it's natural to want to cling to the glorious times, the gentle times, the easy times, the times when God feels close. That's what was going on that mountaintop, you know. God came so close. And when that happened, the disciples had one of those experiences that changes everything. Not just for them, but for us too. Here on this final Sunday of Epiphany, before we depart the season of brightness and light for the penitential shadows of Lent, we're graced with a glimpse of God's glory. We're offered one last magnificent Epiphany so we can remember that God breaks through even in the midst of the hard times. In those times when we feel like everything's coming apart, God gives us a glimpse of glory so we can find what we need to get through. God's glory comes in so many forms. In the small kindness of a new friend or a complete stranger, in the opportunity to use our gifts and give what we have, in children's laughter and cups of tea and friends and walks in the woods, in an unpretentious pen and ink drawing, or any other simple recognition of God's love and faithfulness. Like the disciples, we live with uncertainty. But God's love is certain. As we look forward to our Lenten journey, I pray we will sink into the absolute certainty of God's boundless love for each and every one of us. And I hope, too, that we'll accept God's gentle invitation to notice the things that keep God at bay, and then to let those things go so that God can come dazzlingly close.